यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तीरवन चारी जय रथ माधव कुंज बिहारी कपि जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी
जय रथ माधव कुंज बिहारी कपि जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी
जय रथ माधव कुंज बिहारी कपि जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी
जय रथ माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी
जय रथ माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी
जय रथ माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी
जय प्रभुपाद जय प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद जय प्रभुपाद जय श्रील प्रभुपाद
जय प्रभुपाद जय प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद जय प्रभुपाद जय श्रील प्रभुपाद
जय गुरुदेव जय गुरुदेव गुरुदेव जय गुरुदेव जय श्रील गुरुदेव
जय गुरुदेव जय गुरुदेव जय गुरुदेव जय श्रील गुरुदेव
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य श्रोतर्षत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की पिताय गौर प्रेमानंद हरे कृष्ण बिसाइड दिस वर्स इन द श्रीमद् भागवतम इज अ वेरी ब्यूटिफुल प्रेयर बाय द देवतास टू लॉर्ड कृष्णा वेर They are using the word Satya 8 times in one verse to emphasize that the Lord is the Supreme Reality. So I'll tell the meaning and then we'll recite it. So Devatas have prayed to the Lord that, My dear Lord, we are suffering in this material existence. You please appear in this world. So, to relieve us from the demons. And the Lord has appeared. So therefore, Satya Vratam. The promise that you make, that you come to deliver your devotees, now you are fulfilling it. So these prayers are being offered by the devatas, while Krishna is in the womb of Devaki, in the prison of Kamsa. Satyavratam, Satyaparam, you are the supreme truth, Trisatyam. Trisatyam means that you exist in all the three phases of reality, past, present and future. Then, Satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye. That this material world, it is satya. But how does it come from? You are the yoni of this world. Satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye. Nihitam means they are not only the source of this world, but you have also entered into this world. Nihitam is like pravishtam. And that is why whatever truth this world has, that is because you are present within it. At the same time, satyasya satyam ritu satya netram. Among all the things that are true, you are the truest. Prithu satya netram. And whatever looks attractive and true to these eyes, it is you who give that truth. Satyatmakam. That your whole form is made of truth. The truth is satchitananda. It is not temporary. Satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapannaha. So that Lord, who is the embodiment of the Supreme Truth, we surrender to that Lord and take shelter of Him. So we'll recite the verse. Satya Vratam Satya Param Tri Satyam.
Satya Vratam Satya Param Tri Satyam.
Satyasya Yonim Nihitam Cha Satye.
Satyasya Yonim Nihitam Cha Satye.
Satyasya Satyam Rita Satya Netram.
Satyasya Satyam Rita Satya Netram.
सत्यात्मकं त्वां शरणं प्रपन्नः सत्यव्रतं सत्यपरं त्रिसत्यम् सत्यस्य योनिं निहितं च सत्ये सत्यस्य सत्यं नितृतसत्यनेत्रम् सत्यात्मकं त्वां शरणं प्रपन्ना सत्यव्रतं सत्यपरं त्रिसत्यम् सत्यस्य योनिं निहितं च सत्ये सत्यस्य सत्यं मृतसत्यनेत्रम् सत्यात्मकं त्वां शरणं प्रपन्ना Hare Krishna. So, the world is characterized by a quest for happiness. Everybody is, whatever they may be doing, even when a person commits suicide, that is also in search for happiness. That is actually not exactly in search for a positive form of happiness, but that is in the hope of minimizing suffering. So he feels that living is more intolerable than dying. So everything that everyone does, even people who go and watch horror movies, the very name horror movie is telling that they are going to be horrified by it. But, you know, there is one rasa called vibhatsa, fear, horror. So that also stimulates the heart and gives some pleasure. So even people watch horror movies because, you know, we cannot be emotionless. The modern Indian idea of spirituality is that we have to become detached from everything. Because we are attached, that is why we are suffering. That is people's idea of spirituality. And they think if I become detached, then I will become free from suffering. However, this is the impersonalistic notion of spirituality. The bhakti understanding is that we are suffering because we are detached. We are suffering not because we are attached, but because we are detached. We are detached from Krishna. So, detached in literal sense that we have fallen away from Krishna, from the spiritual world to the material world. And detached also in the sense that our emotions have no connection with Krishna right now. And because Krishna is the reality, Krishna is the ultimate satya. So, where anything that is disconnected from Krishna, that actually is not satya, that is asatya. In the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna tells Brahmaji the condensed essence of all philosophy. And there he defines Maya. There he says, Krite artham yat pratiyeta na pratiye chatmani tam vidyadatmano vayam yatha bhaso yatha tamaha. He says, whatever you see to be meaningful, to be attractive, but you don't see any connection with me in that, that is Maya. So Maya means anything seen in disconnection from Krishna. That is Maya. Now, the body is real, the soul is real. What is unreal is for the soul to think, I am the body, or this is my body, and it is meant for my enjoyment. So, the Mayavadi idea of Maya is that nothing exists only. Everything except Brahman is an illusion. But that idea leads to a fundamental problem. If Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya, then where did the Mithya come from? If Brahman is the only thing that exists, then where does Maya come from? The Upanishads talk about Tattvatraya. Tattvatraya means three truths: Jiva, Ishvara and Prakriti. In science they call it matter, consciousness and the causative principle. So, Jiva, Ishvara and Prakriti are the fundamental essence of existence. And their idea is all three are a product of Maya. The only thing that exists is Brahman, and apart from Brahman everything else is Maya. But then, where does the Tattvatraya come from? Where does Jiva, Ishvara, Prakriti, where do they come from? They say that they are a result of Maya. Okay, then where does Maya come from? Actually, where Maya comes from is a question which they just can't answer. They try to juggle words and get away with it. Maya is simultaneous existent, non-existent, inconceivable entity. Now, how can something be existent and non-existent? It has to be existent or non-existent, one of the two. So they just can't explain this. So for Mayavad, two questions. Where does Maya come from? And if we are all God, then how can Maya control God? How can Maya cover God? These questions are fatal. And although the Mayavadis try to juggle words and get away from these questions, they really have no satisfactory answer. Because actually Maya, the Jiva, Ishwar and Prakriti are not Maya. We often give the argument that God has to be a person, because I, you, he, all of us, the children of God are persons. So, if the children are persons, obviously the father must be a person. But that argument is, no, you are an illusion, because we ourselves are not persons. So your logic itself is foundationally wrong. They say, you are not a person, he's not a person. Now that's fine, that's your philosophical abstraction, that's your philosophical imagination. But we all feel a sense of personality. Now you go through certain emotions, which unless you share, I cannot come to know. You have individual personality and individual emotions. And I have individual personality and individual emotions. So even if we say that this is a result of Maya, then the argument comes, okay, where does this conception of personality come from? Where does the conception of individuality come from? Unless there is some personality, some individuality, somewhere existing, there will not even be the illusion of individuality and personality. Even for illusion, for us to mistake something, mistake one thing to be something else, a second thing must have existed somewhere else by which we will mistake it. It's like they say, actually this world is false. The only thing that is there is a rope. But we mistake it to be a snake. And they say, oh, when you awaken in knowledge, you will see that there is no snake, there is only a rope. Fine. Accept this reasoning, but take this reasoning a little further. Okay, where does the illusion, the misconception that this rope is a snake come from? Unless I have had some experience of a snake before, I would not mistake the rope to be a snake. Like that, if we are all thinking ourselves to be persons, there must be some experience of personality which is what we are mistaking our current personality to be. So there has to be an original personality. That's why the correct understanding is of Krishna saying in the Bhagavad Gita, this world is reflection of the spiritual world. Urdhva moolam adha shakam. So the reflection exists. If I see it, it is there. But if I go in and try to enjoy the reflected mango, I won't get any taste. But the water which reflects the mango is there. The reflection is to my perception there. And the real mango is also there. It is not that all three, the reflection, the reality and the reflecting medium, all are illusion. No. It's real. So our understanding, which is the actual conclusion of Vedic scriptures, is that this world is real. Our personality is real. And Krishna is a real supreme personality. And there are real relationships between the two. So, the Mayavadi idea is that this relationship which we have in this world is an illusion, and even the relationship with God should be developed so that we get out of the illusory relationship of this, with this world. And then eventually we dissolve the relationship with God also and we become one with God. Their idea is that, yeah, you can develop relationship, you can do some bhakti, so that bhakti will give some higher emotions by which you can get rid of the lower emotions. But then eventually you have to go beyond bhakti. Now Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita very clearly, 7.7, Mattaha parataram na anyat kinchit asti dhananjaya. There is no truth superior to me, even the slightest way. I mean, Krishna is speaking mattaha. He is not referring to some Brahman. He is referring to himself as the supreme personality of Godhead. Therefore, Krishna is the highest revelation of the absolute truth. And as devotees, we understand that the cause of our suffering is detachment from Krishna. When we become detached from Krishna, we come in an illusory realm where we experience illusory emotions. Now what do we mean by illusory emotions? The scriptures differentiate between bhavana and vasana. Bhavana is deeper. Vasana is superficial. So love is a bhavana, lust is a vasana. Now what is the difference? Let's take a simple example to understand it. If a small child comes along and we tickle his stomach, what happens? He starts laughing, isn't it? Now he's really laughing. And we can see him laughing. Stop, he's laughing, he's giggling, he's laughing. But is that happiness? You see, yeah, that's happiness, somebody may argue. Okay, fine, if that's happiness, and happiness is the goal of life, then we can just make a manufacture a perpetual tickling machine and let's keep tickling each other for the rest of our life and all of us can be happy. Isn't it? We all intuitively understand that yes, tickling may produce some happiness, but that is not real happiness. Certain physical stimuli produces certain physical reaction, but that does not touch the innermost core of our hearts. Real happiness is when deep within our hearts are satisfied, our hearts are delighted, and that is expressed as a smile and as a laughter. That is happiness. So, similarly, vasana, lust, actually touches us from externals. It stimulates our senses. And through the stimulation of our senses, it touches our mind, it agitates our mind a little bit. And we feel some excitement, we feel some pleasure. But just as the pleasure of tickling is a superficial pleasure, the pleasure of lust is also a superficial pleasure. Although, it's much more deeply entrenched in our psyche, and that's why many people consider that as the ultimate goal and the ultimate truth of life. The thing that sex is what makes life worth living. But it's very superficial. And that's why if sex were really the source of happiness, then the prostitutes would be the happiest people in the world. But no, they are actually miserable, frustrated. Somebody say, oh, they're not doing it out of love. But yes, people do it out of love. And they have divorces in 1.5 years. Why? Because it's not love. So love is an emotion that originates in the soul and then expresses itself through the mind to the body and the senses. Whereas lust is something which originates basically in the body and the mind. That's the difference. So vasana is mostly bodily and mental. Whereas bhavana is something which is much deeper, originating from the soul. And today most people mistake lust to be love and they don't know anything higher. But there is a huge difference between the two. And the scriptures teach us that. So actually the soul has a natural love for Krishna. And that is not at the level of the body or at the mind or the senses, but at the level of the soul. And that relationship when revived gives the deepest satisfaction to the heart. And that's why the great sages in the past, they are ready to renounce this world so that they can develop love for Krishna. But the important thing is not to renounce the world. Important thing is to develop love for Krishna. And therefore, Krishna comes to this world to reveal to us how there is wonderful reciprocation of love between him and his devotees. So, God has two aspects. One is called immanence and the second is transcendence. So, we all have heard the word transcendental, isn't it? Krishna is transcendental. So transcendent means who is beyond matter and beyond material world. So, parastasmat bhavanyo vyakto vyaktah sanatanaha yahasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita describes in 8th chapter 20th verse about another world beyond this world. So that is my eternal abode. When all in this world is destroyed, that part remains as it is. So that is the abode of Krishna where he resides, which is beyond this world. Na tadbhasayate suryo na shashanko na pavakaha yadgatva na nivartante tadhama paramam mama. In the 15th chapter, after describing this material world through the intriguing analogy of an upside down banyan tree, then Krishna describes that there is another abode. And he says that abode is not illuminated by fire, sun or moon. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita on this verse, he says that why does Krishna select these three objects? The sun, the moon and the fire. So he gives that the sun is the source of light and light enables us to see. So he says when that abode is not illumined by the sun, he says that abode is beyond the power of the eyes to see. And he says moon, the scriptures explain that the devata, the Somadev is actually in charge of the mind. And that's why when there are phases of the moon, full moon or no moon, that people who have mental disturbances, they will get aggravated at that time. So he says that actually, even with the mind, we cannot conceive that abode. That's why it's not illuminated by the moon. And if, what about it is beyond fire? He says fire is associated with speech. He says when he says fire, he has a fiery speech. I heard a fiery speech. So he says we cannot describe that abode by our speech also. So we cannot see it with our eyes, we cannot conceive it with our mind, we cannot describe it with our speech. But that does not mean that it is not attainable. There are two aspects. One is to say that the impersonal is to describe the absolute truth as Brahman, they use the word anirvachaniya. Whereas the Vaishnavacharyas use the word achintya. Achintya means what? Inconceivable. And anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means, vachan means what? Speech or words, yeah. Nirvachaniya means that which cannot be described by words. So anirvachati. So their understanding of God is absolute truth. Brahman is that. Brahman is anirvachaniya. That actually you cannot describe it by words. So one of Srila Prabhupada's stalwart disciples, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, in the 1970s when he was the temple president of Philadelphia temple. He's a very serious devotee, very wonderful scholar. He had done his PhD in religious studies. When he was joining ISKCON, he was completing it. When he completed and then he joined ISKCON. So at that time, an impersonalist organization had come there. And they had made pamphlets all over Philadelphia city. And the pamphlet was, Krishna meditated and became the love divine. Jesus meditated and became the sacrifice divine. Buddha meditated and became the enlightenment divine. You meditate and become the supreme divine. Learn meditation. Learn the secrets of meditation. The devotees felt so angry to just see this blatant propaganda that we can become God. They return to the servants of God. And a devotee considers anyone trying to become God or claiming to be God as expressly manifesting his explicitly manifesting his envy towards God. So the devotees told Ravindra Swarup, you should go and challenge and expose these rascals. So he said, actually we should not go to their program and disrupt their program. It will not look good. But the devotees said, you must go. Then finally they went. So there were two people on the dais and both of them were alternating and speaking. Very captivating. For 2 hours they were speaking, mesmerizing the whole audience about how by meditating you can become God. And then during the class also, because the devotees, Hare Krishna devotees were shaven headed, dhoti kurta, so they stand out among all the other American audience who were dressed in different ways. Actually it was a hippie crowd. So the hippies would often dress in unconventional ways. But still nothing was as unconventional as the devotees' dress. Because you know there are people who would shave off their head, but the devotees would shave and keep something left. Some people would wear hand gloves, but the devotees would wear only one hand glove. And that hand glove also such one finger comes out of the hand glove. So different people would wear different kinds of dress, but they said the devotees, they wear a pajama around their legs. And they tied, some people have their Halloween costumes, you know, where they imitate animals. So they have a tail, but these devotees wear a dress in which there is a tail in the front and in the back. So, you know, even from the material point of view, the hippies would love to do outrageous things. But when they were introduced to Krishna consciousness, they found this is the most outrageous thing you could do. So they would like to do crazy things like, you know, suddenly you are going on the street and suddenly you start dancing on the street. And the police would catch them and punish them. But then Prabhupada started Rath Yatra. And now they were dancing on the street and the same police was escorting and protecting them. So the devotee stood out among all the people over there. And the speakers glanced at them a few times during the class. And then at the end they asked, any questions? Immediately Ravindra Swarup raised his hand. And then they didn't want to answer his questions, they looked around. And the audience was also quite intelligent. They understood, you know, this is from some other organization, there's going to be some fireworks now. So nobody else raised hand. And very reluctantly they looked at him and said, yes. So Ravindra Swarup said that You said that Krishna meditated and became God. But he killed the demon, which Putana, where he was just a few days old. So when did he learn meditation and when did he practice meditation to become God? So, you know, now both of them looked as if, you know, he had very severely offended them. They looked very pained. They said, words, words. The other person caught the thing. Words, words. And they had some people, some followers staged in the audience also. They also said, sorry, words, words. Then one of them said, my dear friend, do you not understand that the truth is beyond words? Words are the cause of duality and illusion and suffering. Do not create illusion by words. Learn to go beyond words and then you will understand the truth. So Ravindra Swarupo said, for 2 hours when you were speaking words, they were not illusions. When I ask one question, then words become illusions. So what double standards? So if the impersonal is really considered the absolute truth to be absolute truth to be anirvachaniya, and the first thing they should do is they should shut up. Stop speaking, stop writing. Because that truth is beyond words. According to their own philosophy. But the correct understanding is that actually Krishna is not anirvachaniya. He is anandavachaniya. Now you can have unlimited words to glorify Krishna. He is yes, even if we glorify him in unlimited words, we cannot glorify him completely. We cannot describe him completely. That is perfectly agreed. But Krishna, the perfection of words is to use them to glorify Krishna, not to glorify the mundane objects of this world. So we Kavi Karnapur has written the Anand Vrindavan Jampu, in which when he is describing Krishna, for one incident, for one description, you will sometimes use 20 analogies. And I just get mesmerized seeing the beauty of the analogies that he is using. And he says, even after giving these 20 analogies, actually, I cannot describe Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is unlimited. So we don't say that we conquer Krishna by our words. But still, we perfect our tongue, we perfect our intelligence by using it to glorify Krishna. So, we accept that Krishna is achintya. Achintya means what? He cannot be understood by our intelligence. We cannot catch him with our intelligence. But surely we can use him to glorify, use our intelligence to glorify him. So, Sevon Mukhe, Atah Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grahyam Indriyai Sevon Mukhe Hijibhadav Swayameva Spuratyada. So, the Padma Purana describes Atah Shri Krishna Namadi, that the name and forms of Krishna cannot be described by our own, cannot be pursued, cannot be grasped by our senses. But seva an mukhe hi jivhado. When we do seva of Krishna, starting with our tongue, we use our tongue to glorify Krishna. Then swayam eva spuratyada. Then Krishna reveals himself. Now even when we say a pure devotee understands Krishna, he never understands Krishna fully. He understands Krishna enough to fall in love completely with Krishna. So the Kena Upanishad describes, he who says he knows does not know, and he who says he does not know knows. He who says that I know the absolute truth, he does not know, because the absolute truth is unlimited. And he who says I do not know, within that there are two categories. There are people who are really ignorant only. It's not that somebody says I don't know, that means he knows. What it means is, just like somebody has never experienced the ocean, he says I don't know the ocean. That's one kind of person. Other is a scuba diver is dived deep into the ocean and gone way, way, way into the depths of the ocean. And then he comes out and he says, the ocean is so vast, I can't know the ocean. Now he knows the ocean according to his capacity, but he doesn't know the ocean completely. That's what the Kena Upanishad says. He who says he does not know, actually knows. So therefore, as devotees, we don't try to conquer Krishna with our senses. But we certainly serve Krishna with our senses. In the Christian theology, there is not much description of God given, positive description, like yesterday we were discussing. There is no description of the form of God. Now the Christians try to justify this absence of knowledge of God, this absence of positive knowledge of God in their scriptures, by saying that God is unknowable to us with our intellect. And therefore, there cannot be any knowledge of God available to us. The Muslims try to justify it by saying that God does not have any form. And of course, we have devotees who have studied the Quran and made a long list of verses which talk about God's eyes, God's face, God's hands, God's legs. It's stunning. So, there are so many verses in the Quran itself which talk about God having form. So, actually, God having form is well described in the scriptures, in all religious scriptures. So, but the principle is that in the Judeo-Christian literature, there is not much positive description of God's personality and God's self-existence. God's self-existence means God has He exists independent of the world. God's one function is to maintain us. But what about God's own personal life, God's self-existence? So the Christians say that actually God is so great that He's unknowable to us. We perfectly agree with that. Yes, God is so great that He's unknowable to us. But if God was really all-powerful, if God is really omnipotent, then He should have the ability to give us the knowledge to understand Him, to give us the ability to understand Him. If we say that God cannot give us the ability to understand Him, that means God is not omnipotent, God is not all-powerful. And that becomes a deficiency in God. Yes. So Krishna has revealed His beautiful form through the Vedic scriptures. And that form exists eternally in the spiritual world. So the scriptures say that actually with our senses we cannot reach the Supreme Lord. That is impossible for us. But we can use our senses to glorify the Supreme Lord. And when we use our senses to glorify the Supreme Lord, we become purified. Actually, when we, in the 89th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni goes to Narnarayan Rishi and asks them a question. See, our senses are material, God is spiritual. Then how can we describe that Supreme Lord with our material senses? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary to this verse, gives a very profound analysis. He says that when a conditioned soul hears that Krishna is a young boy with a complexion like the bluish black complexion like a freshly formed rain cloud, then what does the conditioned soul do? He imagines a good looking young boy. He imagines a bluish black rain cloud. And he superimposes the two. And he imagines, oh, that is Krishna. Chakravarti Pass says categorically that the superimposition of two imagined objects cannot produce the Supreme Personality of God. Therefore, he says, the conditioned soul cannot think of Krishna. With the material senses, he cannot think of Krishna. But then why do the scriptures tell us to think of Krishna? Krishna, so many times in the Bhagavad Gita, he said that manmana bhav mad bhakto, always think of me. So when we with our senses try to think according to the description of scriptures, then it's not that we should think of Krishna, we should convince Krishna that we are thinking of Him. When Krishna becomes pleased by our effort to think of Him, then Krishna reveals Himself in our hearts. And when Krishna reveals Himself in our hearts, then that is not the product of our imagination being exercised. That is the product of Krishna revealing Himself. So therefore, a devotee understands that my spiritual advancement depends on Krishna's mercy. I cannot even think of Krishna without Krishna's effort. But we can surely try to think of Krishna according to the descriptions that are given in the scripture. And when we do that, then Krishna reveals Himself accordingly. So that's why our senses, Rishikena Rishikesha, Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. Narad Muni in the Nath Bhakti Sutra says that the senses should be used in the service of the Lord of the senses. And then Krishna reveals Himself by that. Now, we talked all this in connection with Krishna's transcendence. So Krishna exists in His own spiritual abode beyond this world. As I said, satyavratam satyaparam satyam. He is param, he is beyond this world. And in the Christian tradition, as well as in the Islamic tradition, this understanding is clear that God is beyond this world. In fact, Islam is only among the, is probably the only religion among the major religions in the world which does not consider God to be omnipresent. They say God is omniscient by his knowledge acquiring potency, but they don't think that God is present everywhere. It's a little strange. But they consider that God is, Allah is present on his throne above the seventh jannat. Now, if he is formless, then how is he present on the throne? It's just that. If you ask questions like this, they will say, Shaitan ka kaam kar rahe ho tum. You are doing the work of the devil, deluding people, and you will be punished by Allah for that. Allah is beyond our intelligence, and don't ask questions which are beyond your intelligence. Now, it's one thing, yes, we also say that there is something certain which is inconceivable. But what is the inconceivability about? Inconceivability is not about the fundamental issues of life. Why? Who am I? Why am I suffering in this world? What is my actual identity? There is no inconceivability about that. There is very clear understanding about that. What? They say that actually, for example, they don't accept the idea of karma, because of which they get into a lot of trouble. So what is the trouble? They can't understand why people are suffering in this world. They say, suffering in this world is actually Allah's test to you. Fine, Allah's test, we also accept Krishna's test. But the real problem is not that Allah is testing us, but the real problem is, why does Allah test different people differently? And imagine all of you go for an exam and everybody gets a different question paper. And some people get a very easy question paper, some people get a very difficult question paper. And then you say, why like this? He says, don't ask any questions. It will be very outrageously discriminatory. So actually, they say this is Allah's inconceivable will. The principle of testing is fine, but the real problem is not that, if there is a flood and everybody becomes homeless, everybody is suffering, you don't feel so bad. But, if somebody comes and blows up only your house, and everybody else has a house and you don't have your house, then why me? So what causes resentment is not the principle of suffering. Suffering is there, that also causes resentment, but real anger, people have anger even towards God. Real anger in this world is, why there is differential suffering? Why so much suffering in my life and why so little in his life? Actually, if you go in his life, you will find there is so much suffering in his life also. Everybody is suffering, but still we can say relatively some people are poverty stricken, diseased, and they have terrible relationship problems and everything. So why the differential suffering? So now we understand it is because of individual karma coming from previous lives, but they don't have the understanding. So actually, intelligence, the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes that doubt is a function of intelligence. That only if a person is intelligent, then he can have doubts. But then, it's also important to know that doubt is not the only function of intelligence. If somebody only keeps doubting all the time, then he will never get anywhere. So one has to put faith eventually. So, Ravindra Sarupto, one of Srila Prabhupada's very senior disciples, as I was talking about earlier. So what happened? He was in the study of philosophy earlier. And in philosophy, you learn to become skeptical. All of you know what is skeptical? Skeptical means whatever you tell, you just doubt it. So, he heard from some of the most famous skeptics in European philosophy, and he became a skeptic. And he said, I became a high priest in the temple of skepticism, worshipping the deity of, deity of rational nihilism. Nihilism is refute everything. So he said, you would present any philosophy to me and I could find out fault in it. this is wrong. And he said, it would give me so much joy. You bring any philosophy, I can find fault in it. And then he said, this went on for almost a year or two, and then I started feeling something is wrong, something is missing. Skepticism can tell me what is wrong, but skepticism can never tell me what is right. Understand? If I am skeptical, I am searching for faults. And I may be able to find faults in everything, but I will never know what is the truth. So he said, that time I realized they would have their own skeptics conference, where all skeptics would come together and discuss. So I told them my latest realization. He said, we are all not being sufficiently skeptical. Said, really? How can we increase our skepticism? They're very enthusiastic. How can we increase our skepticism? He said, yes. We should become skeptical about skepticism. That means, yes, I am saying that skepticism can show me the faults of everything, but why can't I become skeptical about skepticism? Can skepticism show me the truth? No, it cannot. So one of his colleagues said, I think that, you know, you feel like you are walking on a tightrope without any net below. He says, I don't even know if the rope is there. I just walk. So when you are skeptical, you cannot believe in anything. You know, by skeptical argument, you can prove that you yourself don't exist. The only thing that exists is your skepticism, without you. So, then he decided that actually I will make one criteria for deciding which philosophy to follow in my life. He said that actually I realized if you go for arguments, counter arguments, and counter counter arguments, and counter 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 arguments, there is no end to this. So the simple criteria I decided was that if I hear about some philosophy, then whoever is teaching their philosophy, at best, I will become like that person. Now, if somebody is teaching a philosophy, somebody is following a philosophy, at best, by following that philosophy, I will become like the person who is teaching that philosophy. And do I want to become like that? I said, by this one criteria, I could safely and easily reject all the philosophy that I came across till I met Srila Prabhupada. So when I met Srila Prabhupada, here was a person who radiated such a personal warmth, such a disarming sincerity of purpose, such a deep concern for everyone, that when he spoke, there was no flippancy, there was no skepticism, there was no doubt. Now, every word that he spoke had the weight of absolute truth in him. When I met him, I talked with him, and I felt I want to become like this person. And that's how I chose the path of Krishna consciousness. When Radhanath Maharaj was recently invited to the Mantralaya is like the minister's office in Maharashtra. So there he was asked to give a talk. So after the talk, there was one skeptical bureaucrat. He said, Swami, you are talking about God and all this, but Darwinian evolution has proved all this to be bogus. There is no God. So Maharaj said, during my search for truth, I also read about Darwin. I read his biography, and I found that the more his theory became successful, the more his personal life became miserable. You know, he had no relationships, and he eventually lost all his aesthetic sense. You know, he couldn't relish poetry, he couldn't relish music, he couldn't relish art, he couldn't relish literature, leave alone relishing devotion. Even mundane sattvagunic things he couldn't relish. Why? Because if ultimately everything is a product of molecules, then that is just a set of molecules. I am a set of molecules. What is there to relish? So he died a famous but unhappy person. Lonely, unhappy person. So he said, that's when I decided that if this is what Darwin's theory did to him, it cannot be the absolute truth, and I don't want to follow it. So we can scientifically also refute Darwin's theory of evolution, but this is the personal experiential way of understanding it. So, yes, as devotees, we may also get doubts. And when we get doubts, we have forums where we can ask questions and answer the doubts. But the important thing is we should also follow the process. By skepticism, we will never arrive at any real understanding. When we follow the process, by following the process, we get realization, we get revelation. So, in the Christian tradition, God is considered transcendent, and so there is no knowledge of God available to us. Now, before Christianity, there were the Greeks and the Romans in Europe. Now, Christianity came from the Middle East, and then Paul took it all and spread all over Europe. So, the Greeks and Romans, they had an idea of the immanence of God. Immanence means God is present within nature. God is present within nature. Now, andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. The Brahma Samhita, Brahma glorified Lord Krishna as he is situated in every atom, andantarastha. He is situated within the universe, and paramanu, he is situated within every atom also. So, is God present in nature? Yes, He is present in nature. Because of His presence in nature only, nature is functioning. So, Krishna is the super soul of the body. Sorry, the Shirodakshaya Vishnu is the super soul of the body. The Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the super soul of the universe. And the Karanodakshaya Vishnu is the super soul of the Mahatattva. So, He permeates all these. And that's how actually matter acquires the ability to do any activity. So, as I was earlier telling, the Islamic religion does not consider God to be omnipresent. And because of that, they cannot understand how God manifests as the deity. But Krishna is present everywhere, and because He is present everywhere, when He chooses to, He can manifest from wherever He wants. So, when the devotees pray to Him to manifest in a form which is made according to scriptural description, then Krishna surely manifests. If we say God cannot manifest through matter, then we are limiting God. If we say that God will get contaminated by contact with matter, then that means, you know, matter is so powerful that it can contaminate God also. Then we are already in matter, then how contaminated we will be? And if God becomes contaminated by contact with matter, then what hope is there for us to become free from contamination from matter? Isn't it? It's a very incomplete philosophy. So I'm in the process of writing a book about deity worship. It's called Idol Worship or Ideal Worship. So actually it's not idol worship, it is ideal worship. So actually Krishna manifests Himself in this world also because He's already present in this world. So this is the immanence. So the Vedic understanding is complete. We accept that God is transcendent and we accept also God as immanent. So we see the God's transcendence. Krishna Bhagavad Gita describes that Krishna is there in the spiritual world. He has His own abode. But then Krishna also shows the Vishwarup. And so the Vishwarup, the whole universe is present within Him. So that is Krishna's immanence. That Krishna is present in matter. Or rather, all matter is present in Krishna. So in this way, the Vedic philosophy is most complete. It reconciles all contradictions and gives us the highest understanding. So when Krishna was a small child, at that time, one day Balramji came to Maya. You know, Maya, what Kanha has done today? He says, what? He says, despite our telling him not to, he has eaten mud. He has eaten mud. Mother Vishwala became very alarmed. And she ran to Krishna. And Krishna was sitting there looking very innocent, playing with his other gopas. Krishna, what have you done? What have I done? I have not done anything. Krishna was not opening his mouth fully. All these gopas are saying that you have eaten mud. They are all lying. But your brother Balram is also saying that he has eaten mud. You have eaten mud. So are you going to say that your brother is lying? And Krishna is always a little respectful of Balram. Of course, he is respectful when he wants to be. Other times he neglects him. So Krishna called Mother Yashoda, come here. And then she bent down. He started whispering something in her ear. Immediately Balram became alarmed. No, he's going to spin some story now. He's going to get me into trouble. What is he saying? He was looking at her. So Krishna told him, you know, Maya, yesterday Balram ate mud. And I was going to tell you, but he did not want to tell me, so he's speaking a lie about me. So Balram realized from seeing Krishna's face and Yashoda's face that something is wrong. So he said, Maya, if you don't believe me, then you tell Krishna to open his mouth and then you can yourself see the mud in his mouth. So then Yashoda said, okay Krishna, open your mouth. Krishna initially appeared a little reluctant. He said, no, open your mouth, you have not eaten mud. No, I have not eaten. Then show it and you can prove it. So Krishna was a little hesitant. Then Krishna opened his mouth. And as soon as he opened his mouth, Mother Yashoda saw the mud inside his mouth. And immediately her face, eyes lighted up. You know, sometimes when you catch a person, catch a thief, eyes light up. So like that. And so Krishna was here, Yashoda was here, and Balram was here. So Balram was looking at Yashoda's eyes. And Balram saw Yashoda's eyes and his eyes lit up. And immediately his eyes lit up. And Krishna saw Balram and Yashoda's eyes lit up. Yeah, I'll get into trouble now. So immediately, he made the mud manifest and he made the mud unmanifest and he made the universe manifest in his mouth. And suddenly Yashoda Mai saw within Krishna's mouth, she saw the whole universe, she saw the planet, she saw the stars, she saw the vast sky, she saw the earth. Around the earth, as she looked carefully, you know, she saw Vrindavan, and she saw her own courtyard, and in that courtyard she saw Yashoda, and she saw Krishna, and she saw Yashoda looking in the mouth of Krishna. And she got completely bewildered. What is this? And she closed her eyes and her head started, is Krishna really my child? Or what is this? Am I dreaming? She started pinching herself. No, I'm awake, I'm not dreaming. If this is real, then how can the whole universe be in Krishna's mouth? Krishna sits on my lap and drinks my milk. Who is this Krishna? Perhaps Krishna is God. If he is God, then I should worship him. And immediately she was about to fold her hand and start offering prayers to Krishna. And then Krishna thought, oh, this will spoil all my rasa with my mother Yashoda. But he just didn't want to get in trouble for having eaten mud. But he did not want the whole maternal relationship to be spoiled. Vatsalya ras. So he did not want Yashoda to be in Aishwarya Bhava. So he made a completely forbid. He just smiled very innocently and mischievously. And Mother Yashoda, when she saw Krishna, she was about to start offering prayers to Krishna, and she saw Krishna looking so innocent, so helpless, so sweet. And Krishna raised his hands, you know, please pick me up. And immediately Yashoda forgot all about offering prayers. And she picked up Krishna, put her on her lap. And Krishna started drinking Yashoda's milk. So, this Krishna, he actually has the whole universe within him. But that Krishna appears like a small child playing in the mud in this universe. So sometimes Krishna would be playing around in the courtyard, and at that time, you know, they noticed the cows would have long tails. So he would just go behind and just for the sake of fun, catch the tail of the cow. Now catch the tail of the cow would become frightened. And the cow would start running, and then Krishna would become frightened and would catch the tail even more tightly. You catch the tail even more tightly, the cow would become even more frightened. The calf, not the cow, and the cow would start running. And then Krishna would be just running, holding on for dear life, and the calf would be running here and there. And all the elderly gopis would start laughing, saying this fun. So, this is Krishna. He performs very sweet pastimes. And that Krishna is Satya Satyam, he is the supreme truth. Now, as Krishna, as telling he was, first he was in the Kaumar age, then Paugand age, then Kaishor age. So, and Krishna was just entering his Kaishor age. At that time, one day, Krishna went to the forest with his gopas. So, every day when he would go to the forest with the gopas, they were cowherd boy, cowherd men. So, they were interested first with cows and then also with cows. So Krishna would take the cows and go to the forest. And initially Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. First, Nanda Maharaj told Yashoda Mai once that now Krishna has grown now, from tomorrow onwards, we will entrust the cows to Krishna and he can go and graze the cows. And Krishna was so happy, yes, he was very happy. I can go to the forest, I can play, I can enjoy. And Krishna became very happy. Mother Yashoda said, what are you saying? Our Krishna is so tender. You know, that is when his feet fall on the ground. Actually, his feet, I see, they become red. When they fall on the ground in our own house, they become red. Then what to speak of when he goes out into the forest? There'll be thorns, there'll be pebbles, there'll be brambles. He will get hurt. And there is so much hard work in taking care of cows. And we have so many servants, they can take care of them. I will not let my Krishna go out. So, at that time, Krishna became very upset. Oh, Maya, you don't spoil my fun. And actually, in the forest, there'll be so many birds and parrots and peacocks, and we will dance and we'll play with them, and there'll be so much fun. And you are spoiling all our fun. Then he realized that Mother Yashoda is not going to listen like this. Anyway, Balram will be coming with me, so he will take care of the lady. Mother Yashoda always had a lot of faith in Balram because Balram is the older brother; he will protect. And then Krishna became very angry. Anyway, if you don't let me go, then I will not listen to you and I will still go. Then Mother Yashoda became silent. And Rajaraj Nanda was expecting some opposition from Yashoda Mai. But he was surprised that Yashoda Mai did not speak any opposition. And then Krishna decided to go. So the next day, they decided that Krishna will go. Then Yashoda Mai that evening came to Krishna and she said, said, Krishna, I have got something for you. What is it? He said, I have got shoes for you. So he says, you will go into the forest, then your trees will become, your legs will become pierced, so I have brought shoes. So Krishna looked at the shoes and he said, you know, I am going in the forest as a servant of the cows. And if the servant is going to wear shoes, then the master should also wear shoes. So if you are going to get me to wear shoes, then you should get shoes for all the cows. And so I started thinking. And the Maharaj had 9 lakh cows. And each cow had 4 legs. 36 lakh shoes. He says, Kana, I don't have so many shoes. Krishna said, then I will also not wear shoes. The gopis, while glorifying Krishna, they say, Trunacharanugam Shriniketanam Panipanarpitam Te Padambujam Krunakucheshuna Krundiruchayam. So, Trunacharanugam. Truna means grass, chara means those who eat. Trunachara anugam, one who follows. So, Krishna went in the forest as the follower of the cows. That's why when Krishna would return in the evening, everybody would be waiting for Krishna to return. And the Maharaj, Yashodamai, the elderly Gopa, the elderly Gopis, and all the young Gopis would be on the towers of the house. They would all be waiting, when will Krishna come? And first they will see the dust cloud rising. And they would all become so excited. Oh, now Krishna is coming, Krishna is coming. The dust cloud was raised by the hooves of the cows. And then as the dust cloud would settle, they would see all the cows. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cows, and they would look right beyond the cows, and then they would start seeing the gopas. And Krishna would be so careful. Krishna would come last. Why? Because he wants to make sure that not even one cow should get lost. Not even one cow should get lost and be alone and feel miserable and lost in the jungle. So Bilwa Mangal Thakur prays that, my dear Lord, as Gopal, you are so careful that not one of the cows gets lost. But unfortunately, he said, you are not being a proper Gopal. He says, go means cow, then go also means senses. So, actually, as Gopal, you are meant to protect my senses. You don't let even a single cow go anywhere else. But all my senses are going in different directions. What are you doing about it? Please bring my senses under control. I cannot control them. Please bring them under control and fix them on it. So Krishna comes last. And all the Vrajavasis, they are waiting and watching. And finally they say that they see actually a brilliant blue effulgence. And then they look forward and then they see as if Krishna is like a shower of bluish black cloud. And that cloud showers down the liquid nectar of its beauty. And that beauty and that liquid nectar enters through the eyes into the heart and inundates their heart with pleasure. So, this is how Krishna would come back in the evening. Now, our acharyas have written books which describe Krishna's pastimes throughout the day. What he does in the morning, afternoon, evening, full day, what Krishna describes is described. What Krishna does is described. So, that as Yashoda and Krishna were discussing, and Krishna said, I will not wear shoes. Then at that time, the cows were there, and they all heard this. Oh, Krishna is going to the jungle. And if he goes to the jungle, his leg will get spoiled. And the cows became very restless. And then, that night, by the power of Yogamaya, the ropes that were tying the cows were released. And all the cows ran into the forest of Vrindavan. And in the forest of Vrindavan, they went wherever there were pebbles and rocks and thorns, small stones, with their hard hooves, they bit them, and they crushed it all into powder. That's why at that time the forest of Vrindavan became filled with dust. Now that is soft, softer than Johnson & Johnson baby powder. Even now, if you go to some place like Ramandreti, you'll see actually you can roll in the dust and the dust is so soft over there. That was the soft dust is the evidence, the reminder of the cow's love for Krishna and how they did not want Krishna to at all hurt. So Krishna started going every day to the forest to take care of the cows. And the cows would be grazing in different parts, and then Krishna would be playing with the gopas. And they would have all different kinds of games. Sometimes they would just jump here and there, and when they would see a frog, they would just jump right next to the frog. And the frog would get frightened. Who is this cow? And the frog would jump, and the gopa would jump exactly like the frog. And the frog would get even more frightened. And the frog would jump into the water. The gopa would also jump into the water. And then everybody else would laugh. Sometimes they would, a monkey would be sitting, and they would go and just sit right behind the monkey. And the monkey would look and see, who is cow? And the monkey would jump onto a tree. They would also jump onto a tree. And sometimes they would play different games. Sometimes they would do dramas. Krishna, one boy would become the king, another would become the servants, and somebody would become the police, somebody would become the thieves. And they would perform various pastimes like this. So one day, Krishna was with the gopas, and he started glorifying all the gopas. Oh, Amshuman, your name is very befitting, because all the time your body emits a shining effulgence, even when it is covered by the dust of the forest of Vrindavan. Oh, Subala, you are ornamented by your great strength, which is the product of your singular love. Oh, Sudama, you are garlanded by the garland of good fortune. Dham means rope. Shri means good fortune. Shri Dhamma means the garland of good fortune. Sudama or Subala means one who has auspicious strength. Oh, Varuttapa, because you have controlled the mind, you are able to get all your desires fulfilled. Oh, Devaprastha, your form is like the crest jewel among the forms of everyone in the world. And I started glorifying everyone. And the gopas were hearing and they were playing. And then suddenly the gopas said, Krishna, since morning, we have not eaten anything. And because of hunger, we are feeling like a person bitten by the poison, by a poisonous snake, and the virulent poison of hunger is spreading all over our stomach. In fact, our raging appetites have turned our bellies into furnace pots. And we cannot tolerate this hunger anymore. Oh Krishna, oh Balram, you are the protector of all of us. Please tell us how we can get some food. So Krishna smiled at them. And actually the gopas were looking like they're young and tender. And because of their hunger and the beads of perspiration that were there on their face, they were looking like wilted lotuses with dew drops on them. And Krishna smiled. And just the smile of Krishna relieved them. He said, just a short distance from here is Mathura. And there are very learned and famous Brahmanas who are performing the Angira sacrifice for going to heaven. And these Brahmanas are famous for their good qualities and for their charity. In fact, even the great sages come and offer obeisances to them. When the kings perform huge sacrifices, these Brahmanas are among the foremost who are called. So, they are famous for their broad mind and their liberal distribution of charity. So go to them and ask for food, and you will get abundant food. So cheerfully the gopas playfully went and ran to the assembly. The short time they came there, where the Yajnashala was there. And seeing the Yajnashala, as they saw the fire of the smoke rising, and they saw the huge kunda, that gratified their eyes. And nowadays when we have yajna, it is a small pot, small hole is there in the earth, and we call yajna kunda. But actually in the past, when there was yajnashala, it was a huge yajna kunda. In fact, the world's oldest book available in mathematics is called Shulba Sutra. And Shulba Sutra is the book where the Pythagoras theorem comes for the first time, even before Pythagoras was born. It is there. So Shulba Sutra actually describes geometry, but geometry is described for the purpose of making yajnashalas. Because different yajnas, if you have to appease different gods, then the yajna kunda has to be of different shapes. Sometimes you need a trapezoid. Now how do you make a trapezoid which is say 100 meter by 100 meter? How will you measure the angle? Or sometimes it's even bigger, sometimes there are, it's It's several kilometers wide. And on the side of the Yagyakund, hundreds of Brahmanas are sitting on each side and they're offering Ahuti. So how do they make that? No, you don't have an aerial view at that time. They could have what? But they had the sophisticated science of Shilpa Sutra, which describes geometrical principles for making various geometrical shaped Yagyakundas. So seeing the fire in the Yagyakunda gratified their eyes. Seeing them. And then, as they smelled the ghee being offered to the fire, then that gratified their nose. As they heard the melodious recitation of the Vedic mantras by the Brahmanas, that gratified their ears. As they felt the warm air from the yajna coming on their body and touching their skin, that gratified their sense of touch. And as they thought that soon they would get delicious food which they would offer to Krishna, their tongue started salivating. In this way, just by entering into the Yagyashala, the gopas gratified all their senses. And then the gopas went up to the Brahmanas. And he says, O learned ones, we offer our obeisances to you. You know, you are famous in all the three worlds for your good qualities. You are always engaged in performing yajnas and doing welfare activities for all the people. Just close to us, here is Krishna and Balaram. And they have sent us to you because all of us are very hungry. Kindly give us some food. And you may ask why Krishna has not come. But Krishna is always immovable, like the Mount Meru. He always sticks to his position. So he has sent us. And the Yagic Brahmanas just continued offering their ahuti. And they didn't even turn towards the Gopas to look at them. And when they didn't even turn, the Gopas felt very disappointed, realizing that the Brahmanas didn't feel obliged to give them any charity. The Gopas turned around and went back. And when they came back to Krishna, they were utterly crestfallen. So Krishna, when we went to the Gopas, when we went to the Brahmanas, these Brahmanas, they what to speak of giving us food, did not give us any attention or did not give us even a word in response, which is the basic response of hospitality taught in the Vedic culture. He says, going there, the only thing we received that was the smoke that went into our noses. Oh Krishna, the Gopa said, your instructions are always infallible and they are always successful. So how is it, just as nectar can never turn salty, nectar is always sweet. Similarly, your instructions are always true. So how is it that by trying to follow your instructions, we have faced such humiliation and disappointment? So Krishna said, oh, those Brahmanas are totally infatuated with the idea of going to heaven. And although they are famous as being charitable, it seems that their charity does not extend beyond their own bellies. That means they give charity to whom? Only their own stomachs. So they are very charitable. Eat as much as you want. Nothing more. And then still, Krishna said, hear me and I will tell you how you will become successful. So, just in the same Yajnashala, behind them are the private quarters of these Brahmanas. And there are the wives. And these wives possess the wealth of having surrendered their minds to me. Go to them and ask for food and they will surely give you food. Because they are utterly devoted to me and they understand what is culture. So go to them and you will not fail. And those Gopas were just disappointed. They had such innocent faith in Krishna's word. But he told them to go and immediately they went. We know that actually first Lord Ram told Sugriva to go and challenge Vali. So first time Sugriva went, Vali, you coward! Why are you hiding in your bed chamber? Come out and fight with me if you have some courage. And Vali came out. And he fought and fought and fought. And then what happened? He was too powerful. Actually, Vali is the son of Indra. And Sugriva is the son of Surya. So Indra is the king among God. I said, Vali was more powerful than Sugriva, and he begged Sugriva, and Sugriva had to flee for his life. And Sugriva went back to Ram and said, Arya Ram, you know, if you couldn't kill Vali, you could have told in advance. Why did you have to get me beaten like this? Lord Ram smiled in his face. Vali, Sugriva said, I somehow escaped with my life. He would have killed me today. And Ram said that, actually, both of you look utterly identical. And I didn't know how to recognize. I didn't want to kill you by mistake. That's why I didn't shoot an arrow. But, he said, we should wear some distinguishing mark. And he said, Lakshman, give him a garland. Lakshman brought a flowery wine, a creeper, a wine, which had flowers on it. And he put it on Sugriva's neck. Sugriva came forward and offered his head and he wore that neck. And he said, now you go. So naturally the Lord has created everyone. How can he not recognize the difference between Vali and Sugriva? But what had happened was, when Hanuman had brought Ram and Lakshman to meet Sugriva, Ram and Lakshman were wandering around in the bottom of the Gandhamadan Parvat. And Sugriva was on top. So Hanuman took Vali and Sugriva on Ram and Lakshman on top. And when he met Sugriva, Sugriva was very impressed by Ram. And so he was sitting on a sal tree and he offered a sal tree seat to Ram, but he did not offer any seat to Lakshman. So Lord Ram noticed this and he was annoyed. And then immediately Hanuman was very sharp and perceptive. He noticed that Lakshman is being disrespected and Ram is not. So he immediately brought a sandalwood tree and he offered a seat on par with Ram and Sugriva to Lakshman. And Lord Ram was pleased with Hanuman. So, because Sugriva had dishonored Lakshman, so because of that offense, Ram said, let him get some beating. Ram, let him get some beating. And then, when he was to be garlanded by Lakshman, at that time he had to bow down in front of Lakshman, bow his head down. So in that way, when he bowed down, at that time Lord Ram said, now he has been exempted of his offense. The second time when I told him to go, so Sugriva looked, he was going and, you will really shoot the arrows or you will not shoot? Go a little again. You will really shoot the arrow or not? And Lord Ram said, just don't worry, you go and I will do the needful. So the Gopas had not the slightest fear like that, no hesitation. Krishna told them to go, immediately they went. Now, the Yajnapatnis had heard about Krishna and his glory from the Vrajavasis. Vrindavan and Mathura are readily close by. And they had heard. And just by hearing about Krishna, they had become attracted to Krishna. And that attraction was not at all material, it was pure and divine. It was not the woman's attraction for a man, it was the soul's attraction for God. And by that attraction, they had devoted themselves to Krishna utterly. And because they could not get the association of Krishna, they could not serve their Lord personally. So, although they were young and beautiful, but their bodies had become wilted. Although they always thought of Krishna and that thought gave them some solace. So the Gopas again went to the Yajnashala, went behind the Yajnashala to the private quarters of the Yajnapatnis. And they started telling, you know, we have come from Krishna. And Krishna has sent us to you to give us, request us to give you food. When they heard the one word Krishna, that word Krishna started reverberating a million times in their minds. And immediately, like stunned. What is that mantra? What is the magic that it causes? How can it spellbind us like this? Initially, when the young Gopas had come and they had asked for food, these Yajnapatnis, they were like wines of motherly affection. And they were very happy and they very sweetly welcomed them and smiled at them and graciously received them. And the Gopas were thinking, now they are going to get food. And suddenly, when they heard the word Krishna, they became completely stunned. And they could neither speak nor move their hands and all. They were just like in a swoon, lost. Krishna, 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 Krishna. That sound was reverberating and producing indescribable nectar. No jane janita kiyambi amrete krishvarneti krishna dvayi. Rupa Goswami says, I do not know how much nectar these two syllables Krishna can produce. So the Gopas started looking at each other. He said, alas, it seems we are very unfortunate. First time we went to the Brahmanas, but they did not even hear us. So we were not surprised and they did not fulfill our request. But we are even more astonished because these Brahman Patnis, they heard us very nicely, they received us so warmly and lovingly, and now they look as if they have completely turned into stone. And as has some ghost possessed them, it seems the word Krishna had some mystical force which caused a transformation in their heart, and the transformation neither removes the cause nor the effect, and they are petrified by that. As they are speaking like that, slowly the Yakshapatnis came back to the conscience. And when they heard, they had always heard about Krishna, thought about Krishna, meditated on Krishna, prayed to Krishna. And when they heard that now they have the opportunity to serve Krishna personally, immediately they jumped up. They ran to the kitchens and told their maid servants to collect the choicest food that had been prepared for the ceremony. And they put all the food in golden pots, which had crystal lids on them. And they started carrying the pots in their hands. Their husbands started shouting, "Where are you going? What are you doing? You have to do the yagya together with us." The yagya patni is completely neglected. As Krishna calls, "Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja." Give up all other duties. And immediately started going. They had made a large variety of preparations. And they took all of them together. There was food, Chaturvidha Bhajan Tema. Chaturvidha Bhagavat Prasada. Food that can be licked, chewed, sucked, and swallowed. All four kinds of food they got. And there are four kinds of food, and the foods produce six kinds of taste. So they got food of all these kinds. Now, in Anandamayi it is described that food should have, prasad should have four characteristics. What are the characteristics of prasadam? It says, first should be fragrant. Even before you see it, the fragrance should attract us. And then, and once the fragrance is there, when you see the food, it should actually captivate us by sight. It should be so attractive, so colorful. And when we touch it with our hands, it should be soft and juicy. Juicy. And then when we taste it, it should be delicious. So, if there is this food that is fragrant, beautiful, juicy and delicious, then that satisfies Krishna completely. And of course, that satisfies Krishna's devotees. No doubt about that. So, they got all these varieties of prasadam in big, big pots and they started carrying it. And because these pots were huge, they had a lot of trouble in carrying it. But physically it was a great burden, but their hearts were lightened completely by the thought that we are going to see our beloved Lord very soon. And they started walking towards Krishna. And as they were walking, they were talking, glancing at each other, talking with each other a little bit. And the gopas were innocently walking forward and showing them the way. And as they came to the Vrindavan forest, they saw that the trees were bent down. The leaves were stretched out. They understood, oh, Krishna must be here. And the trees are shading him from the sun. And as they went closer, suddenly they saw majestic blue effulgence. And then they went forward and they saw that effulgence was coming from the body of Krishna. And when they found that the effulgence went to their eyes and circumscribed their eyes as their kajal, that went through their ears, the sweet word that Krishna was speaking, it entered their ears, and Krishna ultimately entered their hearts. When they looked at Krishna's beautiful form, with their eyes, yesterday we decided that verse, Shamam Hiranya Paridhim Varamalya Barha Shamam, that's Lord of Shama Sundar, Hiranya Paridhim, he was wearing golden dress, and then Vanyamalya, there was a forest garland on his barha, he had a peacock feather, and like that they were Dhatu Pravala Natavaravesha Manuvratam Se. He was having Dhatu Pravala, decoration of natural minerals. Natavar, he was beautifully decorated. They said, who is this person? Is he Cupid? Is he some actor? Is he just going to perform some drama? So captivatingly dressed. Now Krishna was wearing a peacock feather and he had a turban. And that turban had become slightly tilted because it had brushed against the tree. And in that turban there was a garland of lily flowers. And then on his ear also he was having lilies. So when they saw him, actually they took Krishna in from their eyes into their heart and they embraced him there. Krishna entered into their hearts, came out of their hearts and again entered into their hearts. And the gopis had always prayed to Krishna and seen Krishna's form in their heart. And now they saw that same form of Krishna outside. And they were stunned. When Krishna saw them, Krishna smiled at them and he said, please come and sit down. Thank you for bringing this wonderful food for me and my friends. I am very, very grateful for you. You have left everybody else and come to me to give this food. And your service is so extraordinary that I can never repay it. Kindly be satisfied simply by the extraordinary standard of your service. For I can do nothing to repay you. Actually, this Krishna also says to the gopis, Na pareham, that I cannot repay you for what you have done. So the gopis and the Vrajyapatis heard this, they were delighted. Their hearts started throbbing in ecstasy. And they offered all the food to Krishna. And they offered their obeisances to Krishna, not directly, just folding their hands. And then, as they were beholding the beautiful form of Krishna, Krishna spoke to them. Now you should go back to your homes and assist your husbands in performing the yajnas. So I am very pleased by people who worship me as Yajneshwar. And then the Yajnapatis heard this, they were devastated. Where Krishna had said, welcome, please come and sit here. Their hearts had blossomed in joy. But when Krishna spoke, go back, they were completely broken down. For a few moments they couldn't speak any words. And then they started speaking. Said, Krishna was like a beautiful moon. But the moon, instead of showering down nectar which the Chataka bird brings, had suddenly poured down the poison. Go back. And the Yajnapatis just couldn't tolerate it. They said, alas, oh our Lord, what are you saying? When a stream leaves the mountain and rushes down its slopes, can it ever return back to its origin? Never. Like that, now we have left our homes and come to your lotus feet. We can never go back there. You know, the pit of householder life is just a place where everyone suffers. We have left that place and we will never return again. If a blind man goes out on his own, he is unlikely to find the way and he will get lost. But if by good fortune a blind man finds the right way and reaches the destination, then will he leave the destination and go back to his place and get lost again and trying to find that place? Never. Similarly, we are not learned, but somehow we have attained your lotus feet and you are the ultimate goal of all scripture. Now that we have attained your lotus feet, how can we leave you and go back? If somebody who is blind by some miracle gets a divine vision, will he ever want blindness again? Never. How, O Lord, can you ask us to go back? Your words may be filled with morality, but they are utterly devoid of love and affection. We have surrendered to you with our hearts. Please reciprocate with your heart and accept our love. Do not reject us and speak these words of morality. And they were seeing that Krishna didn't seem to listen. And then they said, but even if we go back, our husbands and our relatives will never accept us because we rejected all of them to come to you. The gopis also pray the same thing to Krishna. When Krishna is there in the forest and he disappears from the gopis, so Krishna, gopis pray, Pati sutanvaya bhratru bandhavan ati vilanghyate antyachyutagataha gati vidastava Udgita mohitaha hitava yoshita kastya jenishi. The gopis pray, Pati sutanvaya, our husbands, our brothers, bratru bandhavan, our friends, our sisters, ati vilanghyate, we have left all of them. Antya achyuta gataha, we have come to you, O Lord, who are achyuta, who are infallible, who never disappoint your devotees. Why have we come here? Gativithastava Udgita Mohitaha. You know why we have come. We have come because we are attracted by the loud, sweet sound of your flute. Krishna's speech, but he is very sweet. Maturaya Gira Valgu Vakyaya. Krishna's speech is very sweet. And the words that he speaks with this speech are charming. Valgu Vakyaya. But when he plays the flute, Chukuja Venu. Bhagavatam discusses that when Krishna plays his flute, then the flute surpasses all other sounds. And it acts like a noose. The sound of the flute enters through the heart, through the ears, into the heart of the gopi, then it is like an invisible noose which drags them. So Krishna, we know because you called us. You know that we have come here because you called us by the sound of your flute. How can you leave us and go away now? Kitava Yoshita. We are young, unprotected women. How can you, a man who is meant to protect us, Kasya Jainishi? How can a man leave a woman unprotected? And that too, it is night now. How can you leave us and go away? Same way the Yajnapatis are saying, we have left all our relatives and come to you. If we go back, they will never accept us. Even sinful men will criticize us. We cannot go back. Please allow us shelter at your lotus feet. These are the flowers that you carelessly throw away or just touch with your lotus feet. Now we pick them up and put them on our chest, put them on our heart, and they become the treasure of our lives. So if the flowers that you reject are such a treasure for us, then what to speak of you, my dear Lord? If we have attained you, how can we leave you and go away now? So Krishna smiled and he said, such obstinacy does not befit you, O venerable ladies. Listen carefully and I will tell you the path of auspiciousness. Krishna is very expert at giving instructions when he wants to. In fact, before that also, when the gopas were very angry, so Krishna first sympathized with them and he said, yes, their charity does not extend beyond their bellies. And the gopas became, Krishna is on our side. But then Krishna told them, actually, you know, ordinary people always find fault with others. But you should not be in the category of ordinary people. Actually, these brahmanas must have been very busy in performing the yajnas, and that's why they could not attend to you. So don't be unnecessarily angry with them. So Krishna is telling, don't find fault with others. There's no need. But here he tells the yajnapatnis that, listen carefully and I will give you a word that will open the path of auspiciousness to you. Please, he said, but actually, those who hear about me, chant my holy names, think about me within the innermost core of their heart, and serve me always, they can bring me under their full control. In fact, such a result cannot be achieved even by direct contact with me. Therefore, should go back home and render devotional service to me. And soon you will see me. In this life, because you are the wives of Brahmanas and I am in the Vaishya family, our direct association will not be possible. But if you keep serving me, soon we will be reunited. And as far as your husbands are concerned, do not have the slightest fear. They will wholeheartedly accept you back. That is my guarantee to you. And Krishna spoke like this and persuaded them. And hearing Krishna's sweet and reasonable words, the Yajnapatnis agreed reluctantly. They had offered all the food to Krishna, and actually through the medium of the food represented their desire to serve Krishna. They had not just offered their food to Krishna, they had offered their heart to Krishna through their food. And then they turned around and slowly, with a heavy heart because they had to leave Krishna, but with a joyful heart because Krishna had given their instructions by which they could return back to him, they came back to their homes. And in the meanwhile, there was no Yajnapatni. Yajna Brahman Patni, the Brahman who had not been allowed to leave by her relatives. And she had heard that Krishna is just close by, and the Gopas had described Krishna's beauty. The Gopas had described how beautiful Krishna is, how handsome and powerful Krishna is, and how that Krishna is just waiting for you to serve him. And that description of Krishna captivated her heart. And then she could not go out. Then she turned inwards. And in her heart, she turned towards Krishna. And she became so deeply absorbed in Krishna that she went in a trance. And in that trance of love, in that samadhi, she saw Krishna appearing in her heart. Krishna appeared in her heart, manifested himself personally and gave her darshan. And told her, give up everything and return to me. And then Krishna disappeared. So that Brahman Patni sat in meditation. And as he sat in meditation, by the arrangement of the Lord, within a short time, she was transported in a spiritual body to Vrindavan. There she got the association of Krishna's most intimate devotees, the gopis, who trained her in how to serve and please Krishna. And then she got the association of Krishna. So when the Brahmana saw how this lady had got a spiritual body and attained the spiritual world, they were amazed. They said, great yogis, after doing tapasya for millions of lifetimes, are not able to leave their body as per their will and get their life air out through the Brahma Rantra. Actually, the yogis, when they have to do tapasya, in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes in great detail that if one has to attain success on the path of yoga, then one has to leave the body in a particular way, at a particular time. And only then one can attain an auspicious destination. Generally, when the soul leaves the body, the soul leaves through one of the holes, either through the mouth, or through the nose, or through the eyes, the soul and the life air. Of course, the soul can break through the body and go also. But if the soul leaves through any of the lower holes, then that is indicated that is the soul is going to go to the lower planets. If the soul leaves through any of the upper holes, then the soul is going to a higher destination. But the yogi is, when they want to attain liberation, they get their life air to rise upward, upward, the kundalini they get rise up to the Brahmarandra, which is in the head. And then, by the power of their concentration, when the right moment has arrived, they use all their concentrated energy to cause their skull to crack. And then, the soul and the life air comes out exactly to the skull, that is, zoop, they are going straight up. They are going to attain liberation. So that is a perfection which takes many, many lifetimes of severe practice to achieve. So he says, but this woman, without doing any austerity, has attained the ultimate perfection of yoga. She has become a yogini of devotion. And she is worthy of our respect. And by that time, the other Brahman Patnis came back. And these Brahman Patnis came back. The Brahmanas, when they saw this first Brahman Patni leaving her body and attaining a spiritual body, and on the other side, they realized, oh, how condemned are we, how foolish are we, that we are so caught in reciting our mantras, in doing our rituals, in performing the karma kanda, that we forgot the purpose of the karma kanda. We did everything for satisfying the Lord, but the Lord personally came to us. But we neglected. Diktam. Condemned are we. Condemned is our expertise in performing rituals. Condemned is our recitation of the mantras. Condemned is our performance of fire sacrifices. And glorious are our wives. Glorious is their devotion. Glorious is the destination that they have attained. So when their wives came back, they personally got up to welcome them. And then from that day onward, they started treating their wives as more respectable than the renowned sages of the forest. And then the wives absorbed themselves in their devotion to Krishna from that time onwards. And in the meanwhile, Krishna in the forest sat down, and all the gopas sat down around with him, and they all sat down. All the food was beautifully cooked and artistically laid out, and all of them had a big feast. And as Krishna was enjoying the feast, he was relishing not just the taste of the food, but relishing the love of his devotees, which they had offered so selflessly to him. So, this pastime is very sweet, but it has a very important lesson. You know, all of us do a lot of rituals. While doing rituals, it is very important to remember the purpose of the rituals. If you forget the purpose of the rituals, then the rituals don't give us much benefit. See, there are two schools of thought. Some people say there are no rituals required, only essence is required. The essence is bhakti. And therefore give up all rituals, just have the essence. But actually, without the external, the internal is very difficult to develop. Just like, suppose, you know, I lie down on a chair with crossed leg, with my hand behind, and you know, my leg on the desk. Mm-hmm. I say, Prabhu, I am feeling very humble. It's not possible. Because as soon as I sit like this and I stretch out my legs, I feel bossy. So the externals do affect the internals. So the rituals are psychophysical, are precise psychophysical activities. That psychophysical means mental and physical. And by doing certain physical gestures and expressions, certain emotions are stimulated in our heart. So the rituals, the externals are very, very important. Once Srila Prabhupada was in Hawaii, at that time one devotee had come. This devotee had earlier had his own organization. And then he had been inspired by Prabhupada and had joined Prabhupada. But all his followers had joined with him, but still he remained like a guru of his followers. And he had his own version of Krishna consciousness. So he would not shave his head, he would not wear tilak, he would not wear dhoti kurta. But he would just wear outside normal clothes, and he would also preach some Krishna consciousness. So he was sannyasi actually. He was sannyasi, but still he was not wearing saffron. He was wearing shirt pant. So Prabhupada told him, why are you not wearing saffron? So he said, Prabhupada, the dress is superficial. The dress is external. The devotion is what is essential. And he said, because of the dress, so many people get alienated. Some people wonder what is this strange dress. And that's why we cannot preach to them effectively. So therefore, I am keeping the superficial dress aside so that we can do the essential preaching of devotion. So Prabhupada replied, if the dress is superficial, then only superficial people will be affected by the superficial dress. You understand, Prabhupada is brilliant. If the dress is superficial, only superficial people will be affected by the superficial dress. Those who are serious people, they will see beyond the dress to the essence. So why are you giving up the dress for to satisfy superficial people? You be serious and show your seriousness and you will attract serious people. So, as devotees, we should not consider the externals to be unimportant. The externals are important. Because when we follow certain externals, you will find that the devotional emotions come much more naturally. Imagine if you wear Bermuda shorts and sleeveless t-shirts and wear a black goggles. Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
You know, it'll probably feel like whistling to attract some girl at that time.
So, the externals do affect the internals. So those who say that actually the rituals are unimportant, they are never able to make any tangible spiritual advancement. So we have to have the externals, and see at the sadhakana sadhana stage, the externals are the means to access the internals. That's why when we come in front of the deity, we offer obeisances. We hope, actually, what is the spirit of offering obeisances? Actually, when the devotee takes darshan of the Lord, he goes into so much ecstasy that he falls on the ground and faints in ecstasy. So the acharya say, you are not fainting, at least fall down. So, the externals, but when you fall down and offer obeisances, then that stimulates, that is conducive to development of the devotional emotions. So, when the sadhaka stage, the externals are the means to access the internal. And when we have actually got the internal emotion, the internal devotion, at the siddha stage, the externals are the means to express the internal. At the siddha stage, a pure devotee is always offering his obeisances to the Lord in his heart. He doesn't have to offer obeisances physically, but still he will offer. Why? Because for him, at that stage, the rituals become the means to express the internal emotion. For us, the rituals are the means to experience the internal emotions, to access and experience the internal emotion. And for him, he's already experienced the internal emotions for the pure devotee. But even he follows the rituals because, for him, the rituals are the means by which he expresses those emotions. That's why the rituals cannot be given up, either in the sadhana stage or in the siddha stage. They are always necessary. But at the same time, if we stick only to the rituals and don't go to the essence, that is also unfortunate. And the purpose of the rituals is what? To actually reach the essence. the essence is actually we want to develop devotion to Krishna. But if we just do the rituals and don't actually experience devotion to Krishna, don't try to experience devotion to Krishna, then we get minimal benefit. So, once people from three religions went to God, and the person from religion A said, "Oh God, I have one prayer to you. Please destroy the followers of religion B. Please destroy the followers of religion B." And then the follower of religion B went to God. And he said, "Oh God, I have only one desire. Please destroy the followers of religion A." And then the follower of religion C went. He said, "My dear Lord, I have no selfish desire. Just fulfill the prayers of the followers of religion A and B."
So, the purpose of going to God is not to ask God to destroy your others. The purpose of going to God is to ask God, pray to God to destroy our own ignorance, our own forgetfulness of Him. This is superficial. Where apparently they are doing the ritual of ritual of prayer. But the purpose of the ritual of prayer is to develop love, not to foment and express hatred. So, you do the ritual but defeat the whole purpose of the ritual by cultivating hatred for that ritual, which is actually meant to develop love. So, the rituals all have a purpose. And in Krishna consciousness, we do a lot of rituals. But the rituals essentially have to be done with remembrance of Krishna. If the remembrance of Krishna is not there, then the rituals all become a burden. So, you know, when we do yogasanas, actually yogasanas involve a lot of stretching. Stretch your arms, stretch your legs, stretch your body. So Prabhupada calls yogis as traditional acrobats. So they are acrobats. So of course, if that acrobatics helps us to maintain our good health, that's okay. But the point is, that when you do yoga, at that time it is very important to breathe at the right time. To take in breath at the right time, to release the breath at the right time. Because if you don't breathe properly, the yoga asanas, instead of strengthening us, will weaken us, will exhaust us. So breathing is crucial to the yoga asana. So as much as breathing is crucial to yoga asana, remembrance of Krishna is crucial to bhakti yoga. In fact, more. If we do the rituals of bhakti yoga, without the remembrance of Krishna, the rituals will just become tiresome. So, Kulashekhar Maharaj describes it in a very graphical way. He says, Amnaya dhyasananya ranyar zitam vedavratanyanvaham medascheda gahananicha purta vidaya sarvam hutam bhasmani gajasnanam vinayat padasmruti vijayate shri narayana. He says, "My dear Lord, without remembrance of you, the study of scripture is like what? Amnaya bhisananya aranya ruditam." He says that study of scripture is like crying in the jungle. If a small child is lost and he cries in the jungle, there's nobody there in the jungle to come to rescue him. In fact, if he cries, probably some tiger will come and eat him faster. Isn't it so like that? He's not studying material existence in jungle. He's not saying material knowledge is jungle. He's saying even scriptural study can be a jungle. Why? Because if one doesn't remember Krishna, one doesn't understand Krishna is the goal, then there is karma kanda here, there is jnana kanda there is this ritual there is that there, one will get completely confused. So even scriptural study without remembrance of Krishna is as laborious and as fruitless as crying in the wilderness. Veda vratanya anvaham medas cheda phalani. Somebody may do fasting, Veda vratanya they will follow. I'll fast on this day. Some people fast on Monday, some people fast on Friday, some people fast on Saturday. The devotees fast on Ekadashi. So we fast. He says, if there is no remembrance of Krishna, then fasting is simply a weight reducing exercise. Medhas cheda phalani. What is medha? Medha means fat. Cheda means to pierce it. That is the only phal you will get. If there is no remembrance of Krishna, fasting will not purify us. Medhas cheda phalani. Avgahanani cha gadasnanam. We may do various rituals. They are like
the bathing of an elephant, Gajasnana. All of you know about bathing of an elephant? He bathes and he makes himself dirty again. So like that, he may do various rituals, but again we will contaminate ourselves. And then last he says, Purta Vidaya, Kulakshikar Maharaj says, Purta Vidaya Sarvam Hutam Bhasmani. He says that actually, if we do rituals, and the rituals have to be done, the ahuti, yajna has to be done, the ahuti has to be offered in fire. But if you offer the ahuti in bhasma, in ash, we get nothing out of it. So like that he says, we may do yajna, but if the yajna is without remembrance of Krishna, it is like offering oblations into ashes. It is useless. So actually, in the very scriptures there are, apart from bhakti, there are three other paths. There is karma, there is jnana, and there is yoga. So Kulashekhar Maharaj is telling, so jnana is study of scripture, yoga is fasting, and karma is doing this ritual like yajna. He says, all these three are useless without remembrance of Krishna. So we have to consciously, for example, we chant the holy names. We should try to think of Krishna. Try to hear the sound of the holy name. We don't have to imagine Krishna's form, but hear the sound of the holy name. When we come in front of the deities, it's not just that we offer obeisances. This is the Lord of my life. This is the Lord whom I have forgotten for so many lifetimes. And now, by some unimaginable good fortune, I have the opportunity to turn back to His lotus feet. So the more we try to cultivate remembrance of Krishna, the more we'll find bhakti will become joyful. And the more our bhakti is Krishna conscious, the more it will be joyful. The less it is, Krishna conscious, the more we are absent minded, bhakti will become a burden. Bhakti will become a burden. And we'll find, oh, when will the 16 rounds get over? When will these rituals get over? When will I get on to the other things of my life? But if we can just absorb, we can try to struggle to remember Krishna a little bit. Actually, bhakti is the only process in which a little struggle gives huge returns. Huge returns. Kulashekhar Maharaj prays, Nathena Purushottame Jagatam Ti Jagatame Kadhipe Chetasa Seve Svasya Padasya Datari Pare Narayane Tishthati Yam Kinchit Alpesham Katipaya Gramesham Alpartadam Sevai Mrugamahe Aho Mudhavara Kavayam. He's contrasting serving Krishna and serving some material master. So he says Krishna, he gives four points of contrast. He says Krishna is Purushottama and our ordinary master is Purushadhama. Purushadhama means the lowest of all people. You know, see, material bosses, what they do is they squeeze as much work from you as possible and they give as little money as possible. So it's Purushadhama. Krishna is Purushottama. In the Vishnu Sahasranam, while glorifying Krishna, Bhishma says, Guru Guru Tamo Dhamma Satya Satya Parakrama Nimisho Nimisha Swagri Vachaspatir Dharadhi. Says Nimisha and Animisha. I mentioned this last time when I had come. What is Nimisha? Krishna blinks his eyes. Oh, Nimisha means he never blinks his eyes. So when we are rendering some service to Krishna, what happens? Krishna unblinkingly opens his eyes and notices whatever service we are doing. And if we commit some mistake, Krishna blinks his eyes and overlooks the mistake. So like that, when Putana came to kill Krishna, Krishna closed his eyes and overlooked her malevolent mentality and saw that she wants to come and offer milk. He made her into his nurse. Draupadi offered a small piece of her sari when Krishna's finger was cut. And Krishna gave, unblinkingly noticed that and gave her unlimited sari in return. So whatever we do right, Krishna notices that. Whatever we do wrong, Krishna overlooks that. But on the other hand, that is the meaning of Purushottama. But what about Purushadhama? Whatever we do right, they overlook it. And whatever we do wrong, they catch it. Like sometimes in colleges you have this, you have to do journal submission. So 50 pages may be right, one page is wrong. And then what? I think all of you have done the drama in Puri. The professor, he throws away the file. Follow the trajectory. Follow the trajectory. Get out of here. So he compares, Krishna is a completely non-fault-finding God. So although he is Purusha, Tamandini says, actually Krishna is Trijagatam Ekadhipe Chetasa. He says, he is the single Lord of all the three worlds. And the material boss, he might be owning a few villages. Nowadays nobody owns a few villages also. They just own a few square feet of their office. Then he says, what can he give us?
He says, he will give you just a alpaarthadam, the material was a little money. That's what will Krishna give us? Swasya padasya dhatari. He will give us residence in his own kingdom as his own associate. And to serve the material boss, we have to work so hard. To serve Krishna, what do we have to do? Chetasa. You just have to think about it. So he says, where can we get such a wonderful Lord? And he says, that Lord, who is four things, he has the best qualities, he is the Lord of all the worlds, he can give us the best reward, and serving him is so easy. And still he says that we neglect such a Lord, and we go out in search. Please, can you give me some job? You know, we go out in search for a master who is always fault-finding, who has very little property, who can give very little wealth, and who demands a lot of hard work. He says, aho mudha varaka vayam. Who can be so foolish as to leave such a wonderful Lord and try to find some other master? So, actually, all that we require for serving Krishna is to think of him. Of course, because we can't think of him, we do other services. And by doing the other services, we start thinking of him more and more. And of course, when we think of him also, we'll do other services. One devotee asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you know, you said that if we have to serve Krishna, all that we need to do is just be enthusiastic. So if we are just enthusiastic and we don't do anything, will Krishna be pleased by that? Prabhupada said, yes. If you are enthusiastic, Krishna will be pleased by the enthusiasm. But if you are truly enthusiastic, you will do something. And somebody said, Prabhupada, I have no enthusiasm. I just always feel like sleeping. So Prabhupada said, that means you are enthusiastic to sleep. So, he said that your enthusiasm is misdirected. Everybody has enthusiasm. So it's just misdirected. We have to redirect it. So, actually, serving Krishna is so easy. Certainly, worrying about hundreds of anxieties of this world is far more difficult than struggling to think of Krishna. You know. So, I'll conclude with one quote. Arhat Maharaj says very beautifully, it is very difficult to control our mind and senses and fix it on Krishna. But it is hundreds and millions of times more difficult to live with uncontrolled mind and senses. So we don't have any easy choice in material life. You know, we have two difficult choices. One is less difficult, the other is more difficult. What is one choice? It is very difficult to control our mind and senses and fix them on Krishna. But it is hundreds and millions of times more difficult to live with uncontrolled mind and senses. Because they cause so much anxiety, they get us into so much complications, so many desires, so many schemes to fulfill those desires, so many frustrations, and so many karmic reactions. Therefore, a devotee chooses the easy difficulty. It's difficult. Nothing is easy in the material world. But either we have to choose the easy difficulty or the difficult difficulty. The easy difficulty is try to struggle, put effort and think of Krishna. When you think of Krishna, then as soon as we succeed in thinking of Krishna, all the difficulty varies. Sukhataram aparam na jatu jane haricharana smaranamrute na tulyam. Kulshekhar Maharaj says that once I start thinking of Krishna, then there is no happiness that I can compare with this. Haricharana smaranamrute na tulyam. So we can all pray to Krishna that he bless us with the determination to try to think of him. And if we try sincerely, then he will bless us the second installment of his mercy, that he'll allow us to think of him and become absorbed in thoughts of him. And then our life will become forever joyful. So I'll summarize. Started by talking about how we discussed this word, Satyavratam Satyaparam. So we discussed about God's transcendence and God's immanence. So how God exists beyond this world, and therefore our material senses cannot reach him. Then how can we reach him? According to scriptural description, when we try to think of Krishna, then Krishna, being pleased by our effort, reveals himself. Then we can think of him. If we say that we can never think of God with our material senses, then that means, if we can never think of God, that would mean that God cannot give us the power. So God is not omnipotent. Then we discussed about God's immanence. Because God is present everywhere within matter, he can manifest wherever he wants. And then we discussed in detail about the pastime of the Yajna Brahman Patnis. And we discussed about how there are two extremes. One is to reject the rituals saying that they are not required, only the essence is there necessary. But the essence cannot be developed without the rituals. And if the essence is already developed, then the rituals help us to express the essence. So both ways, whether we have the essence or we don't have the essence, we should not give up the rituals.
On the other hand, we discussed how if you only do the rituals and don't strive for the essence, then the rituals will become a burden. But when we can somehow get the essence of remembrance of Krishna, the more we get it, the more joyful our life will become. So if we don't think of Krishna, then we have the difficulty of dealing with the unlimited desires and anxieties that the mind produces. But if you think of Krishna, then that is difficult, but it is an easy difficulty, and that makes us eternally joyful. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes, sir. The pastime teaches lessons at different levels. At one level, we understand that the gopis became proud, and therefore we learn if those are topmost devotees of Krishna, if they become proud, Krishna rejects them. And what if we become proud? What is our hope? You know, Krishna has not even fully accepted us now. So actually we should try to avoid pride. But actually the inner reason is that this whole pastime was arranged so that the unique position and glory of Radharani would be revealed to the world. Gopis did not become proud, but Krishna left them so that he could show to the world that how all these gopis love him selflessly, but Radharani's love is unparalleled. And for that purpose, Krishna left all the other gopis to be with Radharani. And then it is said that Radharani became proud, and so Krishna left her also. But that is also not true. Radharani was very happy to be with Krishna, but then she started thinking of her sakhis. She thought, you know, they must be so heartbroken because they are not with Krishna. And she thought, you know, let them also find Krishna. So she told Krishna, Krishna, I am very tired. I cannot walk. Either let us rest here, or if you want us to go, then you carry me. I am very tired. So then Krishna said, because we are in the jungle and there is no palanquin over here for you, so you climb on my shoulders and I will carry you. And immediately disappeared. Right, so the external understanding is that Radharani became proud. But the real understanding is Radharani's love is so selfless that she doesn't want to enjoy Krishna alone. She wants to actually have everybody relish the bhakti of Krishna. So she wanted all her sakhis to come. And that's why she manifested that apparent pride. But not pride, it was concern for the sakhis. So we can derive lessons at different levels. So we understand at one level that we should not become proud, but the actual lesson is much deeper over there. Okay? Any other questions? Yes, please. Actually, it's not just that we develop a relationship with those who gratify our senses among devotional circles. You know, we have some senior devotees who may also correct us sometimes. And we should actually have sufficient trust in those devotees that they are our well-wishers. And even if sometimes chastise or correct us, it is for our good. It is not that they are envious of us and they want to put us down because of which they are saying such things. So when we have that faith, then the relationship lifts us up. See, there is sharing and caring. It's possible even in material life.
But that sharing and caring doesn't lift people up. It actually binds them more and more to material existence. Because they're all the emotions are material. But the sharing and caring among devotees is all Krishna centered. And that's why it lifts us up. So, we should also have some devotee relationship where the devotee can give us some feedback and we can take it. That means, you know, we always tend to trust our mind and senses for our judgment. So, anybody speaks anything to me, we actually evaluate it through the filter of our mind and senses. But there should be at least one devotee in our life, you know, whom we trust more than our mind and senses, more than our judgment. That means, okay, my judgment is like this, my mind and senses are like this, but this devotee is saying like this. So most people, when they speak, I see them through the filter of my mind and senses. Okay. But at least this devotee is such a well-wisher, okay, he's saying like this. He's saying that you are at fault in the situation, that's your mistake, and this, I feel it is his mistake. So then, if we have at least one devotee like that, we are very fortunate. If we don't have, then we should try to find and cultivate a relationship like that. But even if we don't have such a relationship immediately, if we are sincere, Krishna guides us from within our hearts. But that internal guidance will come when we sincerely seek and follow external guidance. Yeah, but it's not, you see, there are two different things. Both Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur say that we should have association that is Sajatiya Asha. Sajatiya Asha means those devotees who have the same category of desires. Jati means category, Asha. That means, in simpler terms, you can say like-minded devotees. So say if you like cooking, and some other devotee in some other world who is also involved in cooking, now you can ask him what all do you cook, how do you cook, and you develop immediate relationship with him. Similarly, say if you like to read Bhagavatam, and somebody else also likes to read Bhagavatam, and then it's easier to develop relationship with them. So like that, those who have the same category of desires, it's easier to develop relationship with them. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we are having a relationship on a self-gratificatory basis. No, it is Krishna-centered, and we're trying to serve Krishna together. I'll talk more about the spiritualization of emotions either in today's evening class or tomorrow morning class. It's a whole big subject. I'll be seeing something from the Ramayana and something from Krishna Lila. Okay. Yes, true.
When you talked about the two aspects of God, that is transcendence and one is immanence.
Yeah.
Immanence means God's presence in the nature.
Correct.
So there is a darker side of the nature, that the natural disasters like
Yeah, good question. Actually, the material nature is arranged by Krishna to serve a particular purpose in our spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada writes in one issue of Prichit Purport that the miseries of material existence indirectly serve to remind us of our incompatibility with matter. They remind us of what? Our incompatibility with matter. That means, as souls, we are not compatible with matter. We don't belong here. It returns back to the spiritual world. So the misery serves that purpose. So, a devotee doesn't see that as a dark side of nature. He sees that as, actually, it is actually Krishna telling me that this world is unstable. This world is temporary. I should return back to his lotus feet. So therefore, Satsurup Maharaj once having a terrible disease, Prabhupada told him, a devotee should think as if Krishna has come as this pain to help me turn back to him, to call out his name fervently. Now the laws of material nature will apply to everyone, whether we are devotees or non-devotees. Sometimes devotees may also get painful diseases. Sometimes devotees may also get be trapped in natural calamities. That is possible. But the difference is that a devotee can withdraw his consciousness from the body and from the world and fix it on Krishna, which a non-devotee cannot do. As a non-devotee, when his body is devastated or when the world around him is devastated, that is the end of the world for him. But for a devotee, it's not like that. Like, you know, a couple of years, maybe 3-4 years ago, there was a severe flood in Gujarat. So one of our congregation devotees in Pune, he had gone to Gujarat to meet some of his relatives. And they were in the third story of a house, and as the flood started coming, the dam broke down, and the water started rising. It was, you know, first knee deep, then first floor was down, second floor was down, and third floor came, and they went to the fourth floor, then the water was still coming, and they were on the terrace. In the covered part of the terrace. It's not raining so much, but the floods were there. And, you know, he had been preaching to his relatives, but none of them were ready to listen to anything till then. But then he told them, the only hope is to chant, so they started doing kirtan. And they were doing kirtan for, they had two great fears. One fear is that the water may rise above the terrace level and they will all be drowned. Second is that because of the continuous force of the water, the building may collapse. So they really called out to Krishna, started kirtan, and there's something like 21 hours they are doing kirtan continuously. As far as the water abated. And the water abated, all the other relatives became 16 rounded devotees after that. So they saw both the ghastly face of nature or the ghastly face of a life forgetful of Krishna, and they saw the redeeming power of the remembrance of Krishna. How Krishna, remembrance of Krishna can lift us above this. So yes, material nature will follow its own laws, but a devotee by his remembrance of Krishna transcends whatever miseries material nature may inflict. That's what we don't expect Krishna consciousness to make this world into a happy place. This world will have its nature, but Krishna consciousness can make us happy in this world also. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Maybe Bali and Sugriva were from different demigods.
Yeah.
But how they were identical?
Oh, because they were born of the same father. See, they when this is a long story. Bali and Sugriva were actually the sons of Indra and Surya, but they were these two babies in Swarga, and Indra didn't want them. And Surya also had his duty. So Riksharaj was the king of the apes. He was doing tapasya to get two powerful sons. And he was doing tapasya to please Indra. So at that time Indra saw that he wants sons, and I already have got two children. So then he arranged for them to come to Riksharaj. So because they were born through Riksharaj, so they are expansions of Indra and Chandra, but they were born through Riksharaj. So because they were born through the same father, so they are, and they were almost like twins. Bali was slightly older. But because they were born through the same father, they were very identical. Okay. Yes?
Krishna manifests through Bhagavad Gita, Holy Name, or devotees also. Can you give some broader aspect of how he manifests through devotees? Because he has a lot of qualities and lot of all the many qualities. So how from the devotees' perspective they can see all this?
The qualities which Krishna originally has, they manifest through his parts and parcels. So they may manifest through devotees, they may manifest through non-devotees also. A devotee may be a very sweet singer, a non-devotee may also be a very sweet singer. A devotee may be an expert speaker, a non-devotee may be an expert speaker. So now both a devotee's expertise and a non-devotee's expertise are both a result of Krishna. Yadyad vibhuti mat sattvam Srimad Urjitameva Tatta Deva Vagachatvam Mama Tejo Amcha Sambhava. Know that all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. Krishna tells Arjuna, the 10th chapter, 41st verse. So, everything that we see beautiful, attractive in this world comes from Krishna. But the difference is that the non-devotee's qualities take us away from Krishna. That is, the devotee's qualities take us towards Krishna. When a devotee sings sweetly, he will sing about Krishna. That will increase our remembrance of Krishna. When a non-devotee sings, he will sing about some mundane sex and romance, and that will increase our forgetfulness of Krishna. So, we see different qualities in different people. So what we should see is that wherever we see any quality in a devotee, intelligence, sweetness, beauty, expertise, which is actually this person has this quality and this is just a spark, this is present originally fully in Krishna. So what a wonderful person Krishna will be. Let me try to develop my love for that person. Let me choose, you know, everybody wants to go for the best in life. So Krishna is the best choice for our love for us. So let us go for the best. Let us not settle for anything less than the best. That's how we see. All qualities of everyone come from Krishna. But a devotee but we should focus on those qualities which are present in devotees, because by meditating on those qualities, we will go towards Krishna. Is it clear?
Sometimes it happens that we get attracted to a particular devotee that he has the qualities. Is it a problem?
No. We should. There can be material attraction to a devotee also. But it doesn't matter so much. If through that material attraction, we are actually increasing our Krishna consciousness. That means to please that devotee, if we render more service, then that's wonderful. But if the relationship is only material, then it is a problem. That means somebody pretends to become a devotee, that's like in Mayapur and other places, not in Mayapur, or in other places, what happens is many of these poor, illiterate young people, they have no jobs, they have no careers, they try to become, they become brahmacharis in the temple. And some of them may be singing very nicely, and then this foreign matajis come there and they see, oh, he sings very nicely. And they become attracted. And they think it's a very good idea. I can go abroad, I can marry this mataji and go abroad. And then they go abroad, and when they go abroad, then they become, they don't get any job over there because they are illiterate. So then they become job, they have jobs like cleaning cars in the garages and things like that. So here they were singing for the pleasure of the Lord. And then they left that and now they are cleaning cars and garages in America. So what happened? They can say that I was attracted only to a devotee, or the devotee was attracted to me. But the point was that attraction did not lead to an increase in Krishna consciousness. So wherever there is attraction, we have to see what is the result of that attraction. If some devotee knows a lot of verses and quotes a lot of verses, if we get attracted to that, and if that inspires us to memorize a lot of verses and become serious in Krishna consciousness in that way, that's wonderful. So always, phalena parichayate. What is the phala that is going to have on me? That way we can decide. Is it clear? Okay. Last question. Yeah.
We are new in Krishna consciousness, and sometimes we get angry on some other devotees by his activities or some other things. Is it obvious? And second thing is, what should be our attitude at that moment?
He's asking, sometimes you become angry with devotees. Is that an offense, and what should we do? Yeah, actually, if we become angry, we should think that we have offended that devotee. If other devotees become angry, we shouldn't tell them that you have offended me.
We should not, if some devotees become angry and chastising us, you are committing a Vaishnava prad.
How it is? That actually, sometimes, even some senior devotees may express some anger. But that may be for the service of Krishna. That may be for the purpose of helping us to become better servants of Krishna. Prabhupada would also get angry sometimes, severely angry. But he would correct the devotee, once that correction was there, then he would forget. All the relationship would be entirely normal with that devotee. So, anger can also be used in Krishna's service. But it is only when we are sufficiently advanced. Otherwise, instead of we using anger in Krishna's service, anger uses us in Maya's service. So that's why in our early stages, it's best to avoid anger. So Krishna is not a fault-finding God. You became angry with my devotee, you committed apradha, now fall down. It's not like that. You know, if we are harboring envy in our heart, we hate some devotee. If some devotee is loved by everyone, we feel envious. Why is he being loved by everyone? We are harboring envy in our heart, and that, because of that envy, we get angry and speak bad things about our devotee, then that is offense. But sometimes just because of circumstances, the force of circumstances makes us speak some things. Then that is not considered an offense. But still, that is going to displease the devotee, and that is going to disturb the Vaikuntha atmosphere, the devotional atmosphere that is there among the devotees. So therefore, we should try to avoid that as much as we can. And the way to avoid that is,
that we should, after that whole interaction happens, we should analyze, why did I become so angry? And if a similar situation happens in the future, what can I do to avoid that? By that proactive imagination. That means, okay, this was the first step, you know, he spoke like this. At that time my anger started. And then I reacted like this, and then he reacted like that. And then this happened. So at that first step only, I could have avoided it. When I saw that he was speaking like this, that means he was also getting in an angry mood, he was not responding positively. Then I should not have probed the matter. I could have postponed the matter to future time when that vibrations are more positive. So like that, if we analyze, we will find how we can avoid the situation, avoid the repetition of that situation. And by that, if in the future similar situation comes, we will be able to avoid getting angry. So, yes, anger should be avoided as much as possible. Okay. Thank you very much. Shri Krishna Bhagwan ki
Jai,
Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki
Jai,
Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki
Jai,
Tai Gaur Premanande. Thank you very much.